Mr. Bedlington, Reel 11. You were talking about walking past the people who were digging a time bomb.
Well, when I realised what they were doing, I hurried past. And I'd got about 100 yards away when the bomb went up. And there was bits of bodies just flying about all over, you know. And quite a few of them must have got it. So the next day, we were passing there, and they had a couple of wooden boxes, and there were just two Russian prisoners just shoveling the bits into these wooden boxes. And the German guard stand there with an Alsatian dog, and the dog was just gobbling the bits up. So they were just shoveled down in bits into these boxes. So that was that.
At any time during your period as a prisoner of war, did the Germans ever ask you, or others, of course, to fight for them against the Russians?
Oh yes, we often got calling up papers. They used to push them in your parcels or anything like that.
And what did they say?
They said, you can join any part of the German army and you only have to fight against the Russians, not against your own side. And once you've driven the Russians out of Germany, you're free to go home. See? Well, nobody volunteered. So we just carried on. And then it got on and on and on. We were increased bombing raids. I think Christmas Day of 44, we got bombed twice that day. See? And they were getting a regular occurrence. And there was still no blackout, you know. They put the blackout on as soon as the Ariane 1 came imminent, like. But of course, most of them were daytime, so it didn't apply. And it was getting near Christmas, and we were just carrying on as usual. We had a pantomime that the lads were going to put on, things like that.
And you made your costumes from articles?
Bits of pieces, yes. Bits of cardboard and string. It's marvellous what fellas got up to.
And what are the musical instruments? Did you have those?
Yes, they got musical instruments. We had a damn good band. They were sent through the Red Cross. We had a damn good band. Anyway, at that time, you know, when there was an air raid, they just used to open the prison gates and you ran into the woods, all these pine forests round about. And some of the chaps, the really good entertainers, were bombed in the woods, and practically three or four of the lads was killed in the woods, thinking they were safe. See, and chaps there, you wouldn't think they were religious at all, but they would huddle at the bottom of a pine tree and pray or shout for the mother and that. And the shrapnel used to come down like rain, chopping the leaves off the trees, just like metal rain coming down, you know. And you'd just sit huddled up, you'd carry a blanket and that. And while you were running to the woods, you know, there used to be a system of the air raids. It was, it used to blow five, the siren. That's after the initial air raid. And we used to say, that's the jerky five. That's the Indian for quick. And you were running as fast as you could, and when you heard the jerky five, you would put that extra spurt on. You'd kick your clogs out and run in your bare feet. And while you were running up the road, there was dogs and horses and cats all running up the road with you. All the same way of running into the woods. And then, of course, after the air raid, you just made your way back to camp. So you weren't under the control of the guards or anything at a time like that.
I meant to ask you, did you have regular services every
Sunday morning, yes. Yes, we had a padre in the camp. He was a very brave bloke. He was a chap from New Zealand there. What did they call him? I can't quite remember his name, but he was... I've got his photograph somewhere, but he was a very brave chap. Anyway,
just before we go on, did you have strong religious beliefs that helped you to get through all these...
Not really, no. Just your ground beliefs were there, you know. And, we went through all this bombing, and then it gradually worked up to Christmas and the New Year of
45 New Year, would it be? Aye.
45 New Year. And that by then, of course, you could hear the Russian front quite close. They said afterwards that they'd moved to 30 mile off us, you see. And you could see that things were getting pretty desperate. And on the morning, one of the mornings, they blew the factory up. They'd worked all these years, they'd never got it finished, and they blew it up.
The Germans blew it up.
And bitter by then, January, the usual temperature's about 20 below. It drops lower than that, but January, it's normal temperature's about 20 below. And the snow was almost knee-deep. And the night before, the Italians had moved them out, and their huts, they filled them up with the prisoners out of Auschwitz in their pajama suits. And they packed them into this building, the SS with their guards, that packed them in so tight they were hanging out the windows. That was the night before, and then they set them off on the march in the snow, and we followed them the next night, and we caught up to them, and we were marching along behind these Jewish prisoners, and they looked terrible. Their faces were grey. They weren't flesh coloured at all. They were just a grey. And they had these, they must have been freezing cold because they just had these pyjama suits on that they had. And the SS had their Alsatian dogs, and a Jew would fall out and he couldn't keep up. He would end up crawling. And they would just shoot him in the side of the road. The road was lined with them. Any that dropped out, they weren't going to leave them. They just shot them through the head and just lying in the snow with the blood all around them. Like, there was nothing we could do about it. We were just bystanders. It
must have made you angry, though.
Oh, yes, but there's nothing. Well, at the same time, you were so miserable with your own problems at the time.
How did they announce to you that they were going to move you?
Oh, they just came in, get ready, get packed, and off. And they gave us a bit of extra bread, and off we went. And you carried everything you could. I had a lovely banjo mandolin. I had to leave it. And chaps, there was one chap in the we marched 24 hours that first night. You know, right through the night, the Germans got lost because it was a whiteout, snow all over, and we got to this farmhouse, and we were dead on our feet, and we went up in, we showed into barns. Well, it wasn't too bad sleeping on the hay, and down below we heard this piano accordion this chap played, and them singing, we're roving, you know, I'll go no more a roving with your fair maid, and it was this, it had to throw his piano accordion away after. He couldn't carry it because all you could carry was what you could in grub. And of course, grub, like everything else, the middle of winter, you couldn't get it. So
did you have rests along the way, or was it all the time. Did they stop to give you a little rest? Or
oh, you stopped at night.
Just at night. Through the day you walked all the time.
Walk all the time. And we had...
So anything like toilets and things you did by the side of the road, is that right?
Hey?
If you had to stop for toilets...
Oh, yes, you just had to squat by the side of the road, yes. And we had a deep snow, and we were getting hold of bits of wood and making makeshift sledges in this camp. If you wanted a few nails, you had to buy them, you know, offer the lad in the farm something. So after that was a bit easier, pulling a sledge with your stuff packed on it, your blankets and stuff. And we marched up to the Czechoslovakian mountains.
And how long did that take?
Well, we were actually on the march 3 months. You know, we marched all the way from Poland right up to Munich.
What state were your feet in and your boots or clogs or whatever?
Well, as a matter of fact, we'd had new boots just before the march. We got a set of, from the Red Cross, set of new boots issued. They were worn out by the end of the march, like.
What happened to your food? It wouldn't last.
No,
so
no.
How did you feed after that? Did they feed you?
No, you just starved, or what you could pinch.
You were living off the land in a way.
Well, what you could get. You got into a farm, you were around scrounging for what you could get. I remember this chap and me, I didn't know him. We went up these stairs in this loft and there was pigeons there. We thought, right, we'll have a pigeon. And he grabbed his pigeon and he was wringing its neck. And the German farmer came up, sabotage, sabotage, shouting at the guard. And he flung the pigeon and threw it to those German farmer's feet. And he says, he was saying it was a carrier pigeon that the Germans were using, see. So I had a blue, like, sort of balaclava. Well, I took that off and put my car. They were looking for a fellow with a blue balaclava, you see, and I just had my other hat on, khaki hat. I couldn't find him. He said, right, if they didn't find out who got this pigeon, didn't admit, we were all going to get punished. So I had to take the punishment. I had to get a good beating with a rifle butt and this other fella as well. But it was grim, that, really, marching, you know.
What kind of injuries did they give you then with these rifles? Where were they hitting you?
Well, just across the back and that, you know. You were just bruised, a bit black and blue and that, you see. And then...
Were these old German soldiers at this time that were guarding you?
Well, some of them were, but they would be second-class German soldiers. There was an odd one or two that were still brutal, you know. So we carried on. We got into Czechoslovakia, and the people were very friendly in Czechoslovakia. And we were in this barn, and the snow was practically up your waist by then. And we broke some boards on the back. We thought, right, we're scrounging, two or three of us. We went out and we dropped into this snow, and it was white out. You couldn't see anything. And you were listening, and you could hear the sleigh bells, the horses along the roads, jingle of the bells, and the road must be over there. And we went into a Polish house, Czechoslovakian house. And it was a nice house. We'd avoided. We thought, that's too good for going to a little poor house. But no. And he took us in and he gave us some meat and bread, because apparently they were a protectorate of Germany at that time. And they were better fed than the Poles and that, the Czechs. And he had a map hidden on the wall, and he pulled it down, showed us where the front was and his uniform. What was going to happen? He says, the Russians are doing better than you. They, you know, they'd advanced so far, and we were still held up. The Russians were going to be into Berlin before us, sort of thing. And, well, it was, I don't know, well, those three of us loaded us up with bits of bread and stuff. Way back to camp, and one of the lads had remembered, they were all numbered, the farms. He'd remembered the number of the farm, and he says, right, I'll show you back. And we were going down the road with these chap and his son. There was about three of us, and a German column of SS come up the road, and he opened his coat, and we were hiding behind him, walking down this road in the snow, so we didn't get caught. And when we got back to the camp, of course, they were going to search us, being out of camp like. We didn't get punished for being away, so I threw what I could over the wire to be made before we got to the search. Sorry. So that was that. Then
there must have been a great deal of, in effect, looting as you were going along. You must clear the countryside as you went down.
Oh, yes, you got what you could, but there wasn't much. It was winter, you know, the middle of winter. Everything was gone.
What happened to those that collapsed or were sick on the march and couldn't move forward? Were they picked up in the rear? Were the wagons with you to help them?
Yes, we weren't like the Jews. They didn't shoot. I mean, the fella I was with, he had a bad attack of piles. They took him into hospital. And he got over it all right because he wrote to us afterwards.
So they went into a local medical unit or hospital?
Something like that, yes. Yes. But the snow went. We carried on after. But the funniest funeral I ever saw was one in Czechoslovakia. And we were standing at the gate of this farm in the village where we'd been, and they were burying this fireman, and they had the brass helmet on the top of a very old horse hearse with the glass sides and a glass door at the back, and they were pulling the coffin out, and they had this glass door open, it slipped and smashed all the little bits, and everybody stood around laughing like hell at this glass door smashing on the coffin. And that was the funniest funeral I ever saw. And then, of course, we went on and on day after day.
Did you stop at some places for a day or two, for a period of time?
Yeah.
Or were you always on the road?
Well, usually just for the night, but sometimes we carried on. But when you were sleeping in the hay, you'd take your boots off. And when you had to get up in the morning and put them on, there was a sheet of solid ice in your boots. And you had to march on that ice till you melted it with your foot, you know, marching on.
Your feet must have suffered.
Well, that was the least of your problems. You were more or less hungry. So somebody said, you know, we were just sleeping in pigsties or anywhere you can get. And somebody said, we're sleeping in a hotel tomorrow night. Well, a load of rubbish, you know, we're always hearing rubbish. Sure as life we did. They pushed us into a hotel, this big hotel in this town. Now, what the hell there? Siegenhals or something they called it. The German town were out of Czechoslovakia then. And they pushed us right up to the top. So any bombing, of course, we would get it in this hotel. And of course, one toilet, whose internal queue going to the toilet, you know. And even a chap, if a chap was sitting on the toilet, he had to wee in a tin and pour it down between his legs. So it was really rough that way. So While we were marching along that day, there was a chap going back home, a Dutch civvy worker, on his bike. And we swapped him, we had a little bit of chocolate, and we swapped him for some bread coupons. So I had these bread coupons. We were right on the top floor, we couldn't. So they had some Russian German army, they were in German army uniform, Russian soldiers, but they were never allowed rifles, but they were had a German officer and attached, they were just like work things. And they were sent upstairs to clear out our rooms of tables or anything, you know, we were just having the bare rooms. So they were carrying these tables down. So I got on the end of the queue with a table. And that got me downstairs, see. And standing at the door was a... I just had my khaki pullover on and trousers. And standing at the door was an SS guard. So I went behind him. He didn't see who I was. And I said, where's the nearest bakery? Oh, he says, along there, on the left, about the third door. So. And he looked at us and he said, but you can't go. And I said, I could if you turned your back. And he did. So I nipped out and I got into this bakery and I had these bread coupons for the bread. Nobody questioned anything. I was standing next to a German soldier in the queue. And I had no damn money. And I had these coupons. So I said, load us a mark. And he pulled his wallet out and he gave us a mark. I thought, you'll never get this back. So, anyway.
How many miles a day would you say that you...
Well, up to 30. Well, you know, it was kilometres. Up to about 30 kilometres or even further. So, this was winter time, dark, like. So I got back. And I got in easy enough. And up the stairs. And so we had a good feed of bread that night.
You're living on your wits.
Oh, yeah, yes, you were all the time.
Were the civilian attitudes changing in the sense that being afraid of the Russians that were coming along behind you? Did you get that opportunity to see?
Well, no, we'd put the Czechoslovak mountains behind us, saying the Russians would go to the north of that, I think.
But the Germans must have known by now that they were going to lose the war.
Well, they were disorientated, yes. But the guards never changed their attitude. I know this place where we stopped in the hotel, one of the guards was a ski maker. And it was an alpine town, you know. Anyway, we went on and on, and the weather brightened up. We got a bit of warm sunshine. And we eventually got to a place just before the town of... we were into Bavaria then. And it was getting on into summer sunshine. And we were put into this farmhouse. And there, underneath... was like cobblestones, well, round, big round pebbles. And underneath was the spud cellar. See? We had no grub or anything. So we had a metal bar, and while the guard was marching, he would say, right, he's away on the down. Bang your way through. And we banged our way through about that big a hole in the top of this cellar. And I had a long stick with a fork on the end. We got loads of spuds out that cellar, pulling them up, you know. And we light a fire and bake these spuds or boil them. Anything. You did anything to survive. And then we eventually... the railway station got machine gun with American Mustangs then.
I was going to ask whether the Americans had attacked the column at any time. They wouldn't know that you were prisoners waiting in the sky.
Well, that did occur on one occasion. they said, from now on, you hide in the daytime and march at night. See? Well, of course, the nights were getting shorter. And we were going, now, we hadn't got as far as Bavaria then, and we were right in the open when these Mustangs came over. See? And we were standing there in a column, and had German wagons at either end. And they thought, oh, we've had it here. So somebody shouted, wave anything, wave your handkerchiefs, anything. So waving our arms at these, and he waved back, the pilot, because we were pretty low, and he came down, and it more or less got away from these, and he didn't have give it these German wagons, you know. And the Germans were hiding behind us, the German guards, like. They would know by then, of course, that that had it. So...
Was the column getting longer through prisoners coming in from other rooms?
No. It was just the same as when we started off.
So it was still your own particular camps that
we Yes.
Did.
So we ended up at this place just outside of Bayreuth. Well, that's in Bavaria. No, that's where Wagner was born. See, it's a beautiful town, that. And we were sent, it's lovely wooded in a valley, like wood, lovely town. And we went into this town, no, I don't know if it's a town or a city. And we were working in this place, and there was a Red Cross, a German Red Cross station, smashed up in the railway station. So it must have been bombed before we got there. And it was supposed to be an open town, no anti-aircraft guns or anything. Well, we were sitting in the streets, lovely sunny street, we were just sitting, cobbled street, on the footpath, and suddenly incendiary bombs came down. No warning, no area, and they just start busting on the pavement. So we went into this hotel at this side of the road, and them sitting at the other side went to that side, and two of my mates went the other side of the road. They were buried. The hotel was brought down on top of them. They were never got out. A chap from Pity Me, one of them, boy was out the Northumberland Fusiliers. And then we got out of that and marched back to the camp, and had some of our chaps would had been buried under a railway bridge that was brought down in the town. And three of them were in a box, I knew them well. Three of them were in a big wooden box, and I went to their funeral.
Do you remember the names of these people?
Well, it was Jack Knight, and no, I can't remember the other two. But there was three of them mates, and they were buried in this box. And we took them, we didn't go to the funeral, bury them like, we just took them into this chapel of rest. And in this chapel of rest, it was full. It just looked like a lot of wax figures. They were caught with a bomb blast, and they were in the living movements, in their old dress, like sweeps and whatever.
These were civilians.
Civilians, aye, and they were just piled up like a set of wax figures, piles of them, you know.
Must have been quite upsetting and ironic to know that the war's nearly over, you were going to get out, and then have your friends killed.
Oh, aye, it must have been. So, after that, we marched on to the west a bit, and while we were in this village, in the barns in this village, we were suddenly ordered to get up and go back to the east. And we had on a hill, we had the flag, the white ensign flag by then, because we thought, well, the Americans is pretty close now. We knew by the aerial activity. and we could hear the gunfire to the west of us. And then the Americans broke through, and we saw them coming in with our tanks and that. And we met in the square, and there was a chap out the American tank corps, Helen Wales, they called them then, and he had a revolver, or an automatic, and he said, "Take the town, lads." And we did. We all went into houses, you know,